need. Hit them from the rear with a cavalry charge. Get them to chase you away. Have another group work to get Azar's folk out of the temple and a screen of the archers. Bendenal looked at me thoughtfully. What? No giant fire elementals? Dragon-slaying 13-year-old girls? Magical hedgehogs who shoot fire out of their asses? I tried to save the good stuff for when it really counts, I said. How about we lure them into a magical ambush when they're following our retreat? Would that make you happy?
Yes,
bellowed Alscott. They probably aren't expecting that sort of thing, agreed Bendenal. We use magic sparingly in the field to sustain the element of surprise.
Screw that, Alscott demanded. I want to destroy something.
We rode to within a quarter mile of the temple, close enough to see the building nearly obscured by the multitude of nocturnal warriors who seethed around it. This close scrying was pointless, particularly when we saw the Gavanni priests stalking among the legions by mage sight.
That's a lot more than I expected,
I whispered, as all those who could scouted the battlefield from afar.
Sir Festaren?
I'd venture 5,591, the young knight answered promptly. 6 dark priests, 7 trolls, 1,061 of them are hobgoblins, he added helpfully.
That was bad news. While they weren't as aggressive as regular Gavanni, the eunuchs of the legions tended to be larger by several inches and a few dozen pounds, and strong. They were also better armored, I noticed, with real coats of plates and helmets being almost universally employed. They tended towards spears and halberds. The frontline Gavanni legionnaires, on the other hand, were more lightly and less uniformly armored, and preferred javelins, swords, and clubs. They were also less disciplined. While that made them decent light infantry, if they were pressed, they were more likely to break than the hobgoblins. We'd noted that at Cambrian. Here, I think the point was moot. For whatever reason, every Scrug present seemed personally invested in tearing Azar and his men limb from limb. I grinned.
You suddenly feel optimistic, Min?
Bendenal asked. No, just remarking to myself that only Azar could piss off that many people that thoroughly.
His arrogance unites us all.
Bendenal sighed. This is going to be tougher, particularly with those priests involved.
They haven't thrown up any defensive magic yet, Alscott pointed out helpfully. They're fully focused on kicking Azar's ass.
They're not expecting help to arrive this quickly, observed the war brother who led the Iron Band troops. Usually it takes much longer for us to respond.
Then they won't be expecting a cavalry charge into their rear,
Sir Festaren nodded eagerly. That much of warfare he understood.
As exciting as that will be, I don't think it will be enough to lure the bulk of their forces away, I noted. Look at how badly they want them, I pointed. In the darkness, the goblins were preparing yet another sortie up the slope and against the small sunken foundation the Horkan Order had turned into a redoubt. Azar and his horsemen were still roaming about the field, although much closer to the temple. They were harassing the storming parties enough to keep them cautious of their approach. It was a stall for time that they couldn't keep up forever, though. The trolls we were watching were gathering great piles of rocks together, and that didn't bode well. Worse, the shamans who directed the battle were working closely together, screened by their hob bodyguards. There was a pulsing energy coming from them that could be seen with the naked eye, and that didn't bode well either.
Looks like we got here just in time, too,
Sir Festaren noted.
Lucky for Azar.
So, Bendenal, what's your battle plan?
Mage Lord, I defer to you, my superior in all things, he said graciously. Asshole,
I grunted. I didn't come along so that you could kick the responsibility upstairs, or get my ass kissed. He smiled.
Then why did you come along if not to take command?
Very well, then. We do a hard storm charge, just hard enough to hurt them and let them know they aren't alone, then withdraw in good order. We fall back to yonder meadow and screen the archers, who will screen us in turn with volley fire. Meanwhile, a hand-picked team of high war magi and mage lords will traverse the enemy lines by stealth, preparing a method of escape for our allies. He finished, as if completing a happy tale. I wasn't amused.
Hand-picked? I asked.
Whose hand?
Yours, Brendanal snorted. I'm using my available resources, the most powerful mage in the kingdom. I'll lead the charge. Alscott can focus on stalling the countercharge, while you and the others rescue Azar. That's my plan. It falls short on several important points, I criticized. Improvise, ordered Brendanal. That seems to be a strength of yours. I couldn't argue with that. Hell, he was the one leading a bold nighttime cavalry charge against a foe 5 times his size. I was certain I could come up with a little improvisation in the rescue. We divided up the war magi too. Brendanal asked to take some of his hand-picked Horkans, those who had already been in what he called a storm charge before. I took 4 high war magi, better suited to operations on foot. The men we were rescuing weren't mounted, and trying to factor horses into our spells was difficult. We said our goodbyes and then quietly made our way around the perimeter of the conflict. It took nearly 30 minutes to get into place, long enough so that Brendanal started to complain mind to mind. But we had to avoid a few sentries, too. When we were ready, and our spells hung, I gave the signal. Less than 5 minutes later, we could hear the thunder of hooves rising from the opposite side of the legions. So did the goblins. That's a sound you can't ignore. It starts on the bottom of your feet and travels up your leg like a rhythmic serpent. It was quite gratifying to be spying on them with mage sight, and to see the fearful look appear in their eyes as they felt that telltale vibration in the ground. Nothing makes a noise like a lot of horses on the move, and with the horn calls that Brendanal commanded to augment them, the goblins had about 15 seconds' notice that they were under attack. It didn't do them a lot of good. True, the rearmost hobgoblins quickly turned to face the charge, but most of the scrugs were focused on the ruined shrine and the humans within. The priests certainly were. They didn't break their chanting for a moment. The hobs in the back row readied their wooden shields and couched their spears, but they were only marginally prepared when Brendanal's 400 horsemen ploughed into the rear of their formation, 2 ranks deep. I got to see what a storm charge really was, and it was impressive. It was an innovation of Azar's for just this sort of occasion. The war magi in the cavalry had traded lances for war staves, and when the first rank of horsemen overran the hobgoblins with lances, the wizards cut loose with a wide variety of distracting cantrips. Everything from flashes of lights to loud explosions of noise to high-pitched squeals designed to torment Gavanni ears. Incredibly bright mage lights beamed overhead, flickered, and then were gone to disorient the enemy. There were a lot of damaging spells, too, waves of concussion that knocked down entire ranks, or sheets of white-hot pain that compelled the hobs to scream and drop their shields. Whips of fire and lances of light played across the grisly field. When the momentum of the cavalry charge slowed, the human warriors dropped their lances and drew swords, spending a few precious moments taking advantage of the chaos by chopping at heads and limbs. The war magi changed tactics too, lobbing combat spells to deadly effect, or seeding the ground with nasty enchantments designed to slow pursuit or do damage later. For 30 seconds it was an exercise in pure butchery. A few of our men were wounded, or pulled off their mounts, but when the horn calls sounded for a retreat, nearly the entire unit managed to withdraw in good order. The goblins, on the other hand, had been badly wounded. Hundreds lay dead or maimed on the field, attacked from behind or trampled underfoot. The screams of the wounded, dying and indignant, filled the night, as the horns of the riders mocked them, and the spells of the magi continued to taunt them. A blow like that could not go unanswered, not even when the dead god's priests were in command. Over 1,000 goblins made ready to pursue the attackers at once, leaving a much smaller force behind to continue the effort against Azar's men. They were moving on foot, of course, but they moved with purpose after the bold assault. They wanted revenge. That was Brendanal's problem. As soon as the last rank of Gavanni left the clearing, my men and I began to sneak our way across the meadow toward the shrine, protected and obscured by magic. We encountered outriders and stragglers, of course. We killed them as silently as possible, and used distraction and misdirection as frequently as we could to get us to our target expediently. I watched Sir Festaran slit a goblin sentry's throat, a grim look on his face. By the time we were within earshot of the temple, we'd slain 4 such sentries.
I contacted Azar mind to mind while we crept.
That's us on the northeastern corner, I advised, right where the lines are thinnest. Don't hurt us.
Too many better targets at hand, Azar assured me. Where the trolls?
Already taken care of. Are your folk ready?
Not until after this next sortie. We've had to abandon the horses, worst of luck. They can't abide trolls anyway. The rest of us are fit for battle, less a score of wounded, and our cargo. Can't forget the spoils of our raid, he added ruefully.
Just hang on. We'll be at the edge of your redoubt shortly. The password is Ulna.
Ulna? Must be a story there, he mused. Let me go fight a moment. There was a long pause while we covered the last 100 yards to the ruined temple. Azar and his men were busy. The goblins had sent an assault from the south and west. And there were 2 trolls, and a few squads of light infantry ensuring they didn't escape from the northeast. That's where we came in. Trolls are stupid. Well directed by brighter minds, they can be deadly. The worst sort of heavy infantry you ever want to face. But on their own, they lack both initiative and insight. The priests and shamans who usually control such creatures were busy with their sorceries, leaving these 2 clods on guard duty. Simple enough to ensure that the humani inside the temple don't get out, but I wagered no one told them to beware of infiltrators trying to break in. My team and I hit the beast simultaneously. One spell was designed to daze the creature for several minutes, keeping him aloof from the battle by simple mental distraction. The other spell was subtler. It made the other troll paranoid. It took only moments for his simple-minded delusions to get the better of him, sending him lumbering off into the darkness away from imagined predators. The goblins that were left weren't worth the magic to blast them. We tended to take them hand to hand, sparing them a spell only when needed. They were scattered enough that we never faced more than 2x our number at a time, and we were obscured by magic as well. It was simple, bloody work, but I had a taste for it. With every fallen Gervan, I felt a bit of my burden lighten. Suddenly the last sentry between us and the temple was down. I looked toward the structure. The assault from the other direction repelled, and called into the darkness, Hola! Hola! Azar called from within, striding out of the redoubt. The major's armor was splattered with blood and black fur, his dark mantle helping to obscure him from sniper fire. The mage blade in his fist was likewise coated in the blood of his foes.
Busy night! How many were you able to draw off?
1,000 or so, I whispered back. We have a brief moment of opportunity, if we move fast.
To his credit as a commander, the grateful Horkins spilled out of the ruined temple in good order, going 2 abreast and ready for action. They followed Sir Festaren, who had conjured a weak mage light, to guide them through the battlefield. How long until they realize they attack an empty redoubt? I asked the man they called Death Incarnate.
5 to 7 minutes, he answered promptly. Enough time to get my people clear. That charge? It was you?
Bendenal, I replied. I just decided to help with the easy part.
I'm gratified I deserve such noble rescue, he said, bowing from the waist.
No one said you did, but from what I understand, that manor was hiding something.
Oh, without a doubt. After a strong vanguard, the cargo was the first thing I sent out, in preference to the wounded. We must get it back to Megalyn for study, he declared, or all this death was for naught.
His men were speeding around me, alert but moving with alacrity.
What was it? I asked.
I don't want to ruin the surprise,
Azar laughed.
In due time, spellmonger.
Azar and the other war magi with whom I had bonded over the years, both in Faris and as professional mercenaries, had given me no end of teasing about giving up the violent, lucrative life for that of a village spellmonger. While many saw my title as a name, almost, the war magi used it sarcastically.
I suggest we hurry then,
I advised, glancing out at the tide of furry black faces preparing for yet another assault.
They seem quite determined.
As if to punctuate my statement, the first barrage of troll-thrown rocks landed within the perimeter of the ruined temple with spectacular showers of debris.
Indeed they are,
he agreed. Let's give them something worthy of capturing in the shrine, shall we, my friend? He asked boldly. In the midst of an escape, his first priority was to cause discomfort and harm to his enemies. Azar is a nasty piece of work.
I cast a shield to discourage any direct hits from the trollish artillery while Azar went to work, the last of his folk filing out of the bunker. I watched as Azar cast illusions to make the place look manned, and sigils designed to maim and blind. I helped by trying out a new sigil I'd learned, one designed to send the victim into a berserker rage. I liked that one. I cast three of them at various points, just to keep things interesting. We took no more than 4 minutes to complete our sabotage. Then we sped away after the tail end of the column. At least that was the plan. Before we had made it a furlong away, the dark priests of the dead god finished their incantation. A cloud of shadow poured forth from their coven until it filled the portion of the sky. But it was no mere cloud. It moved with purpose. Over our heads it darted, searching, seeking, black against the black of the sky. It found what it sought and shot past us with a malevolent roar. It landed as a missile shot from a trebuchet, shredding Azar's poor horse from under its legs. The beast's sacrifice saved us both. We rolled free, undamaged if not unscathed. I could not hear a sound as I forced myself to sit up, and my unfeeling hands grasped at my back for my sword when I came around. Azar was already awake and almost upright. He leaned on one knee and the point of his blade, his head bowed as he struggled to master himself. His helmet had rolled free when its strap broke. Facing us both seemed to be a sheet of ebon fire, a wave of black satin that drank in all light in its vicinity. There was a low roar in its presence, and an emanation of pure evil and hatred seemed to pour forth as it consumed. "Not this again," I heard Azar as he gasped for breath. It was nearly the first thing I heard after crashing to the ground. That caused me to spare him a glance. Again? I managed to pull Twilight from the sheath on my back and began to whip up some protections against that scrap of shadow. But what to cast? I quickly chose a number of fast-acting preparations, the kind of thing you cast when you're expecting someone to boil your insides out of you. Twilight swam in front of me unsteadily for a moment, then fixed resolutely at the darkness. "It's not as bad as it looks," Azar assured me, as he lobbed the ball of yellow fire at it, apparently just to piss it off. It seemed to work. "It doesn't look like anything," I screamed over the increasing roar. "It's a piece of fucking shadow!" Azar grinned maniacally. "Then we are the proper knights to slay it," he bellowed, bringing his sword up into line and screaming a wordless war cry. I couldn't fault him for his enthusiasm. I just wished I shared it. Goblins, trolls, hobgoblins, dragons, even the undead I knew how to slay. How do you hurt a belligerent lack of photons? There was apparently more to the creature, whatever it was, because it reacted violently to Azar's charge. It sent out tendrils of itself to strike and harass my comrade. Miraculously, Azar's big blade swept the first few such strikes away with a gesture, while more fire flew from his right hand. But the monster's tendrils were adept and relentless. One wrapped around his right ankle, while another achieved his left wrist. As soon as the creature realized it had the prize, it began to tear the two sections in opposite directions. I couldn't allow that. I had serious gloating to do to Azar over his rescue. I sent a powerful bolt of electricity streaming into the darkness and was gratified to see it writhe in pain, dropping my friend. Azar bounced right up, his mage blade in hand. The idiot was grinning even bigger. "Ah!" he roared. "Finally, a challenge!" Again he charged it, both sword and magic flying through the air in front of him. I had staggered the thing with my lightning strike, but I wasn't sure I hurt it. Its reaction was not akin to pain, merely reflex. Nor did it appear that I did it real damage. It was soon toying with Azar again, batting away his strikes with its limbs, while getting in a few nasty blows of its own. That's when I noted that the creature was not quite self-contained. A thin, almost invisible tendril of power connected it to the circle of priests nearly a half mile away. Whatever it was dependent upon their power and direction. I couldn't have that. Instead of attacking the sail-like living black smoke, I sought for a chance to strike at its umbilical instead. It wasn't long in coming. When Azar rolled behind the thing with the alacrity of an acrobat, the connecting line was exposed to me. I struck, burying the point of Twilight's enchanted steel into the thick of the tendril and, for good measure, activating a severing charm. It didn't keel over and die, as I had hoped, but it did waver in its single-minded attacking and whirled around to face me. If something without a face can face you.
Chapter 15. The Foreboding Corpse. I was not feeling optimistic about my chances of seeing another dawn. The jet-black horror that Shirul's dark priests had conjured or summoned, I wasn't sure which. Pity I didn't have time for a little thaumaturgy. It might have been instructive. Flattened Azar after he struck it with his most powerful spells. The resulting concussion knocked me on my back for the second time in 10 minutes, and I was getting tired of it. My defensive spells kept me from suffering any serious damage, or even much disorientation. When I skidded to a halt on my knees, I was back on my feet, albeit unsteadily, in mere moments. Azar's body was sprawled in the darkness 20 feet from me, face down and unmoving. I didn't have time to check to see if he was dead, but I had a monster to fight. Twilight was nearly useless against it, as I had learned, but I didn't put the mage blade away. There were plenty of other foes stumbling through the darkness on which it would prove quite effective. But for the night-colored sheet of evil that I faced, I would need more than mere war magic, I knew. If Azar's best wasn't enough to conquer it, I would avail myself of better tools. I pulled my sphere from under my armor with my right hand, holding it up at eye level. I pushed my consciousness within, something I had only infrequently dared, and examined the long row of Alcan song spells my benefactor had thoughtfully provided me. Within that library were a small selection of truly violent-seeming spells. I considered and rejected half a dozen before I found one I felt might be effective. I had no evidence for that, beyond my intuition, but I was pissed off enough now to let things flow naturally. My gut said the one like a curly vine, and so I selected it and opened myself up to its power. I don't know if an actual song was heard when the spell was released, but I heard one loudly enough in my head to blot out nearly all else. With a vibration I felt begin in my bones, the sphere provided the energy while the song spell unfurled. I watched in fascination as a powerful tendril of energy formed around my sphere, then manifested itself in a twisting, lurching attack against the amorphous enemy. Instead of hitting it directly, however, it curled around its periphery while it writhed, and instead of attacking directly, it bound itself tightly to the outstretched umbilical that connected it to its Gavani masters. As the spell tightened, the creature became less coherent. Tendrils at its edges began to evaporate into loose clouds of smoke while it struggled against the binding. Azar was forgotten. The creature reacted like a man whose air has been cut off. Now I raced to Azar. He yet lived, from the rise and fall of his chest, nor was there much blood. But he had taken a beating. There was no mistake. I hefted his armored body over my left shoulder using magically augmented strength, sheathing my blade and allowing my sphere to float free. It bobbed out of the way, a few feet from my head, the result of a classy little enchantment and a ring of knot coral. I was just glad Azar wasn't massive in build, as Horka himself had been. As well-muscled as he was still a third less than the towering war magi who had sacrificed himself at Timberwatch. I got him out of the way, 30 or 40 feet from the beast, before I dumped him on the ground. Then I turned back around and began to figure out how to beat this thing. Direct strikes didn't seem to have much effect. It was like the thing was animate smoke, gaseous, liquid, or solid, as it needed to be. It was only mildly amused by electricity, though I'm sure a real lightning bolt might have gotten its attention, and it ignored fire and cold. Direct magical attacks were also ineffective. I couldn't stab it, slice it, ice it, beat it, or heat it to defeat it. By comparison, a dragon was easy. It was still struggling with the Alcan magical strangling vine, but it wasn't defeated. I wasn't sure if the spell would hold or not, and if it didn't, that thing was going to be plenty dangerous. My mind raced. What can you do to an amorphous cloud of angry smoke? You could bag it,
some part of me supplied, like a staple of wool. It didn't take me long to inscribe the necessary elements of the spell. I was working from scratch, but the principle was simple enough. I didn't really need finesse. I built a powerful sphere of magical force around the horror, wide enough to encapsulate it entirely. I didn't touch the thing, at first. Once I was certain it was intact, and I had hardened it significantly, I began to shrink its size. I held my breath a bit when the edge of the sphere finally encountered the creature, but like a bubble being blown in reverse, the spell held. It took a lot of energy to keep it that way, but it held. Only the magical umbilical remained unaffected by the spell, and as soon as the creature's attention was off the vine strangling spell, it had kinked its supply of bile, hate, darkness. Whatever it was that it depended upon from the Gavanni priests was no longer in plentiful supply. The energy cost was tremendous, not more than I could handle, but the smaller I drew the bubble, the more the thing resisted, and the more energy I had to expend to maintain the spell. It was also mentally grueling. I could have been charged by a squad of goblins and not even noticed it. And was. Luckily, Azar had regained consciousness enough to dispatch them before they could interrupt me. "That's an innovative idea," he called out to me over the horrendous roar the thing was giving, now that it was constrained. "I was told to improvise," I shrugged, holding the spell with some difficulty. I honestly didn't know what to do next. If I drew it any smaller, there was the possibility that the magical prism would collapse upon itself, but I couldn't maintain my hold indefinitely, nor could Azar successfully keep goblin patrols off my back forever. But he didn't intend to. Without consulting me, he called his second in command, mind to mind. Within moments, the Hortkan war magi stormed back onto the field with the purpose of attacking the priests. The Gavanni had protected their position, of course, using a couple of trolls and a few centuries of hobgoblin infantry to guard them while they worked their sorceries. But Vendanal and Alscott, and the other high war magi, were feeling particularly flamboyant, or perhaps they were motivated by feeling protective over two of their valiant leaders. I suspect the former. The small squadron of mounted war magi cut through the hobs like a scythe through wheat. The trolls, likewise, were ill-prepared for the storm of spells thrown against them. Once the war magi got within the circle of protection, the Gavanni priests were not prepared to defend themselves. They were cut down, one after another, under the flashing blades of the Hortkans. In seconds, the magical cord they had used to control the dark horror was gone. My spell slammed shut as the creature fought for life, until only the smallest wisp of smoke remained to stain the sky. The goblins launched their last sortie against the redoubt they still imagined was manned. When they gained the walls without contest, they were jubilant, until they began encountering our spells and realizing that they had attacked an empty fort. Then they started attacking each other in fits of maniacal rage, falling over, stupefied, vomiting profusely, or just laying down for a nap while their fellows stumbled around in confusion. In a few moments, the deadliest spells would start to go off. "Let's head back to the castle," I sighed to Azar as we watched. "This has been fun. But I've got real work to do." The mood at Megalyn Castle was jubilant when we returned at dawn. The reserves had been ready to ride out in support of us, and were just as happy not to do us that service. Though the fallen were mourned and missed, only 61 of our men had been lost in the foray. We'd accounted for 10 times their number in the running battle. They had wanted us badly. But our magical corps' brilliant methods of discouraging pursuit meant we were out of danger. It probably didn't hurt that Vendanal had slain their priests and deprived them of both a magical corps of their own and effective leadership. Trying to successfully chase us down without real coordination was just too hard, and before the sky began to pale in the east, we had escaped. Most of the men fell down exhausted after the all-night battle and rescue, but a few stalwarts insisted I stay up and have a cup of wine for breakfast before I sought a bed. One cup turned into three, and I was led upstairs to a suite reserved for honored visitors. I guess I counted. I fell into bed after removing my armor and boots. I don't remember climbing under the thin summer blanket. I don't remember drawing the shutters, but the next thing I remembered was awakening in the late afternoon. A naked girl taking off my clothes.
"Gah!"
I said in surprise. The girl, woman, she was at least 20, drew back, startled. She looked quite attractive, naked and startled.
"Mage Lord," she squeaked, "are you ill?" "What?" "No, wounded then," she added quickly.
"What?" I repeated, confused.
"Mage Lord, I have been sent to tend your wounds," she explained patiently. "Are you well? Are you in pain? Are you in your right mind? Do you have a fever?"
she asked me, slowly, cautiously.
I'm fine. I'm well. I am not wounded," I said,
my muscles protesting the pronouncement violently.
"From the look of the bruises on your shoulders, you're probably in a lot of pain. I have a tincture that will clear that,"
she began, rummaging through a basket on the floor. The angle at which she was leaning over made rummaging a good look on her.
"Wait,"
I said suddenly. "You're a healer." She looked at me amused.
"Why, yes. My name is Lelwyn.
Lelwyn of Tears. Lelwyn the healer, if you want to be technical. Magical healing. I'm serving an internship here at Megalyn before further training in surgery."
"Oh,"
I answered, relaxing somewhat.
Why are you naked?"
"What?
That? Oh,"
she said, realizing my confusion.
"I've been here nearly 6 months. I've learned 2 things about waking a man up to tend his wounds. Firstly, blood is notoriously difficult to get out of your gowns, but it cleans right off bare skin. And 2,
she said with a smirk, "a man whose last recollection before sleep was of battle has a tendency to wake still fighting. But I've noted that a pair of boobs in his face halts him in his tracks. If you'll promise not to bleed on me, I'll put my chemise back on, if you're more comfortable." "It just startled me," I said quietly. "I'm married," I added, for no particular reason.
"Many are," she said with a short laugh. "They still bleed and bruise. Get that shirt off you, and let me tend your wounds."
Lelwyn the healer did an admirable job with my sore muscles. Between her ointments and her skillful hands, my back and shoulders, and arse, legs, feet, and elbows were feeling much better. Azar, she reported, was even worse off than me, with a sprained wrist he hadn't mentioned on the battlefield. Lelwyn was attractive, I had to admit, and her wit and wisdom made her more so. My recent struggles with my fidelity made me very self-conscious around her. She sensed that, I think, and took a special care to keep things light and soothing.
"I have to admit," she said, as she was washing her hands in the basin, "I expected something a little different from you, Mage Lord Minolin."
"Like what?"
"Someone bolder, more forward. They speak of you here in awed tones. The one who faced the dragon, the one who faced Shirul, the one who made a king, the one who made the snow that never melted. The one who drinks with the gods and dines with the Alka Alon."
"I've never drank with a god," I protested. "How do these rumors get started?"
"I know not," she said, picking up a towel. "But you seem a man, as any man is."
"I'm not," I dismissed. "I'm much weaker."
"More guilt-stricken, perhaps," she countered. "Something weighs heavily on you, I can see."
"The weight of all Kalador weighs heavily on me. I've got some problems," I said cautiously.
"And yet you claim you are weak, and you declared that you were married. Thus, a woman is involved."
"Women," I said, "in general. I'm trying to decide how much to trust you."
"I am not just a healer,"
Lelwyn said, drying her hands slowly, almost hypnotically, on the towel.
"I am also a sworn sister of Linta, goddess of healing,"
she said, referring to an old imperial deity. I'd heard of her. Her symbol was an owl, and she carried around a lancet and a basin. She was mostly worshipped in Vor and Merwin, but she did have temples in some of the larger western cities.
"If you invoke my confidence, I am honor-bound not to betray it."
"I doubt it would do much good," I dismissed.
"Try me,"
she suggested.
"I'm a woman. Your problem is women."
"My problem is me lusting for women," I corrected. "I'm a happily married man."
"Ah,"
she said, understanding.
Yet you are still, as I noted, a man, she observed.
A man who took a vow, I countered slowly. It was not in my nature to confide in strangers, but she had a receptive manner that made me comfortable. A man who took a wife, and who loves his wife.
So, love your wife, she shrugged.
You must love all women some in order to love a particular one well. That's gotten a lot harder since I became a mage lord, or whatever I am. Women are throwing themselves at me. That makes keeping my vow difficult.
I can imagine.
Your fame and power would be enough to allure a maid, she said, looking away with a guilty smile. But you are handsome, and handsomely built, mage lord, and you are kind. Worse, you are truly devoted and dedicated to this wife of yours, else it would not trouble you so. That makes you nearly irresistible.
I know, I said bitterly. I've got power I never wanted. I've got positions I never needed. I've got a beautiful wife and son, but that seems to make them want me all the more.
Such a curse, she said, a little sarcastically. Mage Lord Minolin, my deity is not in the habit of granting permission for infidelity, nor is there any good reason why you should suddenly find the company of fair maids appalling. You seem to be a good man who made a vow in good faith. Keep it in good faith, as much as you possibly can. If you make mistakes, and every man will, then do your best to learn from them, avoid them and correct them. That is the path of wisdom.
And what about the uncomfortable urges I get when beset by temptation?
Resist with the entirety of your will, and then don't get caught. She sighed. Mage Lord, regardless of whether you diddle a servant girl or not, you serve no one by bearing this guilt. Even I can see that, and I've known you less than an hour. You are a man in a difficult position. I do not envy you. Like the prettiest maid at the ball, you have attracted admirers and the thrill-seekers who see fame as a fair price for their virtue. Ordinarily, I have my wife and others around me to keep me focused on propriety, I sighed. But here in the field, I have only myself, and I am weak.
Mage Lord, we are all weak, she said, a little bitterly herself.
I stand in line now for a witchstone, should any come available to our poor order. 2 years, perhaps, will pass before I am in the pool of those to be considered. I dutifully tend to my craft, going into this dismal castle and tending the wounds of the magi who fight, all the while studying the finer points of the healer's art, knowing that there are men I could have saved with the might of the stone if only I could catch the attention of the spellmonger himself, she finished, her bitterness expressed. But what are the odds of a mere healer coming into the presence of the lofty?
None, until Linter guided you here and saw fit to deliver your wounded body to me.
I wasn't really that wounded, I pointed out.
You were here. You were wounded.
That's wounded enough, she snapped. I had my opportunity. Your reputation indicates that your head is easily turned by a shapely and willing woman.
My reputation is, alas, intact, I sighed, and you are quite shapely.
Exactly, she said, suddenly annoyed. So I come to your chamber when you sleep, steal upon you like a rogue, and prepare to offer myself to you like a whore, to charm from you what should be properly had by merit. Me, a highly trained professional, a blood sister of the temple, respected by craft and reputation. Me. I was about to capitulate to my weakness and slut myself for magic. She sounded genuinely ashamed.
I understand, I sighed, wondering if she was feigning her discomfort. It would not have surprised me.
You do?
When I was in Wilderhall last year, and all the duchies were endangered by the dead god's legions, I made alliances with people I didn't like, and did things I didn't want to do, in order to secure an army. I was weak. I went against my better nature, even then, in order to accomplish a higher goal. You want a stone, I continued. You know what good you can do with it, what lives can be saved with it, how you can change the world with access to that kind of power. It's seductive.
It is,
she nodded, staring at me. Her robe was open just a little.
I know.
And what's worse is, I know I can make all that happen just by granting you a stone. And what's worse than that is that I kind of enjoy having that power, knowing I can make the world better or worse, based on my whim. That's disturbing. Even more disturbing is the fact that I know you want it bad enough to do whatever I want you to. And I have a very vivid imagination, I added.
I just bet you do,
she said, her pretty eyes narrowing. I know you'd be tempted if I was as fat as a barn or as ugly as a mule, but I'm not. And I know that makes it even worse. And the very worst thing about that is I know you're squirming over this, and part of me really enjoys that.
You're a man, as any man, as I said,
she sighed. But I'm also man enough to know when my resources are taxed, and when my weakness is most dire. I just faced death and a nameless horror, and more goblins than I care to think about. I'm tired, hungry, I'm a very long way from home and my warm bed and my warmer wife. I'm lonely, I'm depressed. It would be easy to trick or allure you into an affair. Indeed, the thought has great merit in certain areas of my mind.
You are quite attractive,
I repeated.
But,
she began expectantly, but I am also a man of my word, however little that is worth. I made a vow to my wife before the very gods. I transgressed once before our wedding, and have a secret bastard to show for it. I came near to doing so again recently. Such secrets should never mar our marriage. I love Anya, love her dearly, yet again and again I am tempted.
I was not sparing with my advice, she urged.
Give in to temptation or not, but resolve the matter in your mind lest your distraction cost lives.
I know,
I despaired. I feel like scum, Lelwyn. I feel as if I should confess all to Alia.
Goddess, don't do that,
she said, alarmed.
No woman deserves.
I know, I said unhappily, so I bear it. As crimes go, it is not so bad, not even a crime by law or custom. Merely poor decisions, I sighed. Weakness. When I wanted something very, very badly. So I do understand, my lady. More, I recognize your worth in even admitting it to me. On that basis, I shall grant you your stone. I've given them for less reason, I decided. Lelwyn looked at me, wonder and confusion in her eyes.
Mage Lord?
She asked, trembling.
You would grant me?
Yes, yes. Come to Sevendor and I'll see you fitted, I sighed. You clearly have the need for it, and the vocation to do it justice. I think I have a stone in my treasury for you.
My lord, I am...
I know, I dismissed. Look, I did it because of your virtue. Let's not overdo the gratitude. That way lays weakness, which I think we've both had enough of for today. She stared at me, her dark eyes fixing on mine.
Your lady wife is a very lucky woman,
she said, to have you as both husband and lord. It is I who am the lucky one, I decided. Is there anything else you would like from me? She studied me carefully.
Mage Lord,
have you ever heard of the Lindalore tribes of Western Faerys? No. I march down the eastern side, I said dully. Why?
They are a primitive people, but well-schooled in certain medicines. I have a massage technique that I think would be very helpful in your situation, she said, firmly.
It's been known to release wondrous healing properties of a patient's own body. I caught her eye. You have my interest, I said evenly. If my lord will simply lay back and allow me to practice this technique, she said, her voice quiet as she opened her robe back up, I think I can bring you to a level of release that will allow many of these troubling notions to leave your distressed soul.
My lady,
I sighed, as long as it's purely for medicinal purposes. There was a party in the great hall that night, a great feast to honor the fallen and celebrate our victory, including honoring important guests, like the spellmonger. I appeared in my fanciest doublet and hose, in Sevendor green, the snowflake of snowstone on my breast. I did my best to drink a toast to every man's health that night. In truth, we were all damn lucky to be alive. I even got up and made a little speech in appreciation for the sacrifice of the fallen and the importance of continuing the struggle. I guess I did well. There were cheers and a lot of thumping on my back by complete strangers. The feast was pure wilderland's fare, a whole roasted stag with plenty of side dishes featuring early summer vegetables from the farms beholden to Megalyn. I enjoyed myself. A mountain minstrel had been hired for the evening, and he played many tunes that made me nostalgic for Beauval Vale. The company was likewise enjoyable, as blood sister Lalwyn consented to partner with me at table that night. She was held in high esteem by Azar, Bendenal, and everyone else at Megalyn Castle for her mastery of the healing arts. Surprisingly, I felt little guilt over the massage technique she had used on me, despite its intimate nature. On the contrary, I felt relaxed and rested, the best I'd felt since I'd left Sevendor. Lalwyn was a delightful dinner companion, too, and made a point to impress me with her magical lore as much as her healing arts. Near the end of the meal, Azar and Bendenal pulled me aside, leading me up to a small tower chamber. They had brought a bottle of wine, so I did not suspect more than a few old friends getting together. But Azar had purpose in bringing me there, as he demonstrated when Bendenal threw back a blanket, obscuring a corpse. "This," Azar said with a certain dramatic thrill, "is the Gavanni warrior we'll be facing in the future. The Gavanni warrior as Shadul imagines him." The corpse underneath bore little resemblance to the Gavanni we'd faced the night before. Its chest was half again as broad as a regular Gavanni, and its shoulders were much wider. Its legs and arms were longer, more heavily muscled, if not quite in proper proportion to its body. The head displayed a thicker brow, lower than the Gavanni standard. Most disturbing was the lack of hair. Apart from a mane that ran partially down its back, the Gavan had some hair on its forearms, shins, face, and torso, but that was it.
"Gods! It almost looks human," I swore.
"It is human," Bendenal agreed. "Well, not biologically. It's pure Gavanni. But they've bred a remarkable number of human-like traits into this strain. Aesthetics," he said with a sniff, "was not one of their constraints."
"He is ugly," agreed Azar, "and tough. Usually any of my men can take any goblin, no matter how tough. Sometimes they get lucky, but usually we win the contest. This one, though, killed two of my men before we brought it to bear. It's tougher, denser. It's faster. It's a hell of a lot stronger."
"No hair to burn like we did at Timberwatch," Bendenal pointed out, "and stature like that. This one is 5 feet 9 inches. Plenty tall enough to ride a horse."
"If he could find one to bear him," I pointed out.
"Horsemanship is not going to be our concern," Azar said, shaking his head. "Ghislaine Manor was one of several breeding pits we've discovered. The priests are using their fell magics to improve the Gavanni race. Improve it to make it far deadlier to the human race."
"How many were there?"
"In Ghislaine? A few dozen? But there will be more. Many more. They mature quickly, too, from what I can see. This one barely has calluses on its hands and feet. The teeth look like they just broke through. Young? Not more than a few years old."
"They tired of losing every contest with us on the field," Bendenal concluded, lighting his pipe. "So they built an even better goblin, one that could contend with a man toe to toe. In a generation, this is what we'll be fighting."
"That's not very encouraging," I said, shaking my head. "First that horror of darkness."
"A night sail, I call it," Azar said proudly. "Beastly things. Good name for it. Between the night sails and this improved goblin, we've got problems. The advantages we had, we're losing, and not even magic can make that up."
"We're holding," Azar said indignantly.
"You're holding because they have yet to test your strength," I countered. "Meanwhile, they send legions south and march prisoners north, and you have had little effect on that. Raids and quick strikes.
good in their place, but hardly decisive.
"We need more manpower,"
Azar declared. "Another 1,000 knights and I will drive the Gavanni back to their dens." "Even thrice that number would not be enough," I countered, "and manpower is needed in Gilmora, which bleeds at Sharul's invasion. Yet you are not wrong. We need more men here, more trained soldiers. This iron ring of Rards might be a fool's dream, but it would help keep the penumbra contained."
"You have made that case often enough before," Azar pointed out. "Why would Rard listen to you now?"
"Because I'm going to dump the body of our little friend here at the foot of his throne," I said boldly, "and I'm not going to accept a refusal." Chapter 16 Wilderhall. I rode into the courts of Wilderhall at the head of 21 men. 20 cavalry troopers, Azar insisted, accompany me, and Sir Festaren. Alscott had elected to stay at Megalyn Castle, now that he had his Witchstone, so he could continue to experiment with it where the only ones he'd hurt were goblins. Sir Festaren remained as my aide. The unexpected battle and aftermath had done the boy no harm. Indeed, he seemed to carry himself more confidently now. But he had also lost a bit of his provincial charm. He was still a good travelling companion, though, and the relatively peaceful trek from the Penumbra to northern Castile was a pleasant enough journey at this time of year. Once we crossed the frontier, the war seemed far away. We were passing fully manned farms, peasants harvesting barley and cows being driven to summer pastures. The men we travelled with were eager for quiet duty. I discovered that inclusion in the mission was a reward for exceptional service. Other than their commander, the men were non-commissioned officers or men-at-arms. Escorting the spellmonger was seen as a high honour, it seemed. I was flattered enough to give the men 20 ounces of silver to drink to my health in the quaint taprooms of Wilderhall when we arrived. I've never had a more loyal or cheerful unit at my back. Wilderhall itself was in the midst of its annual bustle as the court officially arrived for a few months. The palace and the towers had been cleaned, and the summer's entertainments had already been planned, but there still seemed to be no end to the carriages and wains arriving hourly from the south. The king and queen had arrived only a few days ahead of me, and much of the court was still in transit. The important officials had already arrived, particularly Count Salgo, the warlord. He had regained his old offices in the palace complex, and was there when I sought him out, before I had even refreshed myself from the journey. I sought him because I needed his authority to compel a secure storage place for the overlarge Gavanni corpse I was carrying. I had preserved it from rot with magic, but it was still frightening and unsightly. I didn't want word of the development leaking out, not before I could speak to the king about it. I showed Salgo, of course. The old soldier studied the thing intently, to the point of lighting a pipe and contemplating it. He was immediately aware of the implications. "There goes much of our natural advantage," he grunted. "See the teeth? Meat eater. That's going to be difficult to feed. But pound for pound, this looks like a lot more goblin than I'd want to face. As bad as fighting a man." "We're going to need more men," I pointed out, as delicately as I could. "Not just in Gilmora. The Penumbra garrisons will need to be reinforced. They might be 5 or 6 years away from beginning to field these scrags, but when they do, they're going to give us a rout if we're not prepared." "What about an attack in Gilmora this summer?" he asked suddenly. "It isn't looking likely," I admitted. "We saw no sign of preparation for such an attack, and they couldn't hide that. They were settling in, not moving out." "That will give us more time to move men into place," he agreed, pleased, "and perhaps use them elsewhere for a time." "That sounds ominous," I observed. "Is there trouble?" "Along the frontier with the rebellious counties of coastal Ulshar," he nodded. "A few barons are thinking they can play both sides in the conflict. A few 1,000 men and a few raids will sort things out, and we can have the men in garrisons in Gilmora by winter."
"What about supply?"
"That, thankfully, hasn't been a problem yet. The harvest has been good in most places, and we're stockpiling in several castles along the river to keep the troops provisioned. Food isn't a problem, yet. Neither is paying for it. But the king's largesse will eventually run out," he warned.
I've spoken with the Prime Minister and the Minister of the Treasury. At the current rate, we can keep the army in the field about 2.5 years.
That's not long enough, I said, disquieted.
That's assuming much, he explained, and none of it is firm. But the surplus the Treasury enjoys now is not eternal. The Royal Commandos I can keep in the field for longer, but we run out of money for mercenaries and supplies in 2 years' time. I'm not about to worry about my pay 2 years from now, I chuckled. I'm dedicated to being around to bitch about it in 2 years.
Just so, agreed Salgo with the tiniest of smiles. Survival's price is never too high, but moving men and feeding men and arming men costs money, and that money has to come from somewhere.
We'll find a way, I said, thinking about my mountain of snowstone. I didn't really want to fund the war effort with it, but...
It's not goblins, even great goblins like that fellow you brought in, that concern me. We can kill goblins with men, dragons, and that night's elf thing you were telling me of. Those concern me. I cannot defend a castle against a dragon. For that, I need magic.
And I need a weapon I can use against them reliably, I agreed. It's on my list.
Did you not slay a dragon?
I arranged for it to be slain, I corrected. It took the combined might of the entire arcane orders, as well as a lot of luck and the help of the Alka Alon. Could I do it again?
Doubtful. Oh, I'd try. I'd throw everything I could into the endeavor. But would I win?
Who knows?
Gathering men for defense or attack is pointless if it merely makes them vulnerable to dragons, he pointed out, patiently.
Ishi's tits, Sargo, I know, I said, exasperated. I've got a few tricks up my sleeves, but you're asking for certainty, and I've got hope and prayer in my pocket.
I'm consulting with the Alka Alon, I reminded him. I can do my best, but no, I don't have a remedy for dragons yet, or night sails, or great goblins, or traitorous dark magi. I'm doing the best that I can.
I was not criticizing, my friend, he assured me, merely laying the problem out for you. I am a soldier, not a king. I do not make demands. I issue requests for personnel and material. And magic.
Which sounds suspiciously like the prelude to a request for just that, I chuckled.
Indeed, he nodded. But a favor you may not mind granting. As you know, I have commissioned and staffed 3 Royal Commando units. They were designed to fill in where the talents and abilities of a regular feudal levy may be amiss, he said diplomatically. In truth, the average feudal levy was generally light on both talent and abilities. Knights knew how to charge, and peasants knew how to retreat. Trained soldiers were few and far between. To seriously prosecute the war, it had been decided, the king needed some stability to add to his part-time forces.
I've got some outstanding men now, thanks to the bonuses we're paying. We've attracted some first-class mercenaries. Excellent officer corps, too. We've even got a supply stockpile and quartermaster set up in southern Gilmora. I'm ready to deploy them.
Then what is the holdup? I asked. That might be the perfect salve to soothe the rape of northern Gilmora.
I need magic, he said plainly. I have 12 good war magi, graduates of the war college, enlisted in service. But none of them have witch stones, and I have guessed at much of the power of those artifacts. He said quietly. The ability to speak over long distances, for instance.
That is supposed to be a secret, I said.
I've told no one my suspicions, but it is obvious to the observant. It would be quite helpful if each of my Royal Commando units were so equipped.
So you want 3 new High War Magi, I reasoned, sworn to King Rad.
That is not how I would put it, Salgo corrected gently. I would ask the arcane orders for a loan of 3 war magi, or more, for the duration of the war. We can treat them as though they were hired mercenaries, as far as command goes, but they would not be sworn to Rad, if that is what you fear.
I fear any unintended split allegiances, I agreed. If we can run it that way, I have no objections. I have the stones. Send me the candidates and I will administer their oaths and prepare them.
Thank you, Minilan.
Salgo said, visibly relieved. The better equipped the commandos are, the less likely we'll be dependent upon summer soldiers.
We made the agreement official at the meeting of the War Council the next morning, convened in part because of my recent return from the Penumbra. There, with just Rad, Salgo, the Prime Minister, and a half dozen sworn aides, I revealed the Great Goblin to the court. They were